doing that, I work for my wife doing the accounting.
Okay.
One thing I wondered about, maybe you know.
Yes.
One idea that I had when I was at 80 Lil, and that I don't remember doing anything with. I don't think we did. It was making a memory by laying down a thin coating of a superconductive material, and then on top of that, make an array of lines going in the X direction, the lines going in the Y direction.
Yes.
And so at each one of these intersections, with the superconductive sheet of material, you have what I called I can't think of the name right now. It would be a core, anyway.
Mm.
You know, I think at that time they were working with computers with actually little donut-sized things, weren't they?
They were, but this is something that, I mean, I'll see if I may be garbling the story somewhat, but I'll give you my impression is that there was, at the same time that you and Dudley Buck were working on the thin film cryotrons, there were several efforts. So at that time, when you were working on the thin film cryotrons, these magnetic core memory was really getting going. The little donuts, little ferrite rings. And almost immediately, in that kind of magnetic core memory area, people started working on thin film magnetic memory. And these would be like thin films of a ferromagnetic material, and they would like punch a whole bunch of holes out in it and do some appropriate windings on there and create kind of like a memory that way, a memory plane that way. Or there were other ways in which they were using the magnetic domains on these sheets, these thin films of ferromagnetic material.
Yeah.
And I think I believe at RCA there was a similar attempt to do that with a superconducting material, to make a superconducting memory, sort of a big sheet of superconducting alloy, and then creating little holes in it or running lines on top of it. I think in sort of the 1963-64 time frame, I think they were doing that at RCA.
Well, that might be what I have a sample of from RCA. I wouldn't doubt it from what it looks like, but when I look at it, I think that might be what it is.
We should really get Dick Ahrens to look at it sometime. Because he made those things, and he could probably tell us pretty well. In fact, there's he writes about that a little bit in a historical article I have. I'll try and find a copy and email it to you.
Okay.
Because it describes work from RCA.
What was his name?
Richard Ahrens, A-H-R-O-N-S.
Uh-huh. I don't remember the name, but
it'd be
interesting to hear about it. It seems like an obvious thing, because you could put memory sites as close as you could make the lines the narrower you could make the lines, the closer your memory sites to get.
Yeah, I think
memory sites are just one line width away.
Right. Well, let's see. Is there, I guess that, let me just look at my questions that I had. Now, did you follow at all the work that Ken Shoulders continued on to when he went to the Stanford Research Institute? Was that something on your radar?
No, it's not.
Okay.
No.
Let's see. And I guess General Electric had a laboratory in the Bay Area, maybe in San Jose, that was doing cryotron work. Although I think that must have ended right around the time that you came to Memorex.
Who was that?
Brewer, I think, was the man's last name. Brenner, trying to remember.
Bremer,
I think.
Bremer was the person at GE.
Right.
That was in charge of, I said that GE was paying us money to, and so Bremer was my contact at GE.
Oh, that's interesting. I think he eventually moved the GE operation to a laboratory in or near San Jose, in the early 60s, as I recall.
When I was at Arthur D. Little, I came out to California to visit, Bremer and his organization.
Oh.
And they were in Sunnyvale.
Sunnyvale, there you go. Yep. Okay.
I think he continued after I left the cryotron. He continued and made some other things. Somewhere I think I heard that he made a integrated circuit that was maybe similar to what I made.
Yeah, I think he did. He made a very rudimentary computer out of three integrated cryotron arrays. I think one logic and two memory or something like that. But it was a pretty neat demonstration. Way ahead of where silicon was at that moment, but very interesting. Let's see. Do you have any other thoughts about your experience with the cryotron and superconductors that we haven't touched on yet?
I don't think so. Photolithography where you would etch away the areas you want to deposit on. I think it's very similar to what they were doing with transistors.
Yes.
One thing on the integrated circuit that I made for NSA.
Yes.
They wanted it to be contained in a cryostat. In other words, it had a liquid helium I guess you'd call it a cryostat, it generated the liquid helium and could be moved, you know, from one room to another. It was small enough to do that.
Okay.
It was about the size, you might say, of a small file cabinet.
Okay.
Maybe a waist-high file cabinet. So they wanted to show that the whole thing could be put together, not just the cryotron, but the
whole system.
Yeah.
And you delivered that to them as kind of a prototype at the end of your project?
Yeah. That was what it asked for. That was our goal and our project. And so we did make that and gave it to them.
Do you know if they ever, are you aware if they ever went beyond that prototype and had somebody build a larger system along those lines? I mean, you would have been the natural person to do it, I would have thought.
Yeah. No, I don't think they did.
Okay.
About that time, it was becoming obvious that having to have the cryotron and liquid helium was a big negative. Because transistors were getting so small that you couldn't talk about something this size anymore.
Right.
And the liquid, they need to have liquid helium and a machine to make it. Because I think the death knell really for the cryotron.
So it was as much the need for the to have this cryostat, you know, that was the real drawback.
Yeah.
Interesting.
We were even thinking about I don't remember where the space program was, but there was talk about the fact that big cryotrons they wouldn't need a helium generator for space.
Hmm, true.
So that might be a useful place for them, but that never went anywhere.
Interesting. Okay. Well, thank you very much for spending all that time with me and giving me all that information. It's really extremely interesting for me. It fills in a lot of it answers a lot of questions that I've had about the story for a long time. So it's really, and introduced me to some things that I just never would have expected. So,
yeah.
So thank you very much.
Yeah. Well, I appreciate the opportunity to do this because, you know, you just feel like you've worked a lot of your life on this work and you don't want to just see it to be gone.
Absolutely. Yeah, I think it's a fascinating work, and it's work that, you know, still continues today in a way with different people, but I may be writing another article for the IEEE Spectrum. Fingers crossed, the editors are talking about it next week, which would be an article on a current effort to build a superconducting computer that the government is pursuing right now. Much along the same lines, you know, liquid helium temperature, superconducting integrated circuits. These are made with Josephson junctions as the component, which is, you know, it's basically a cryotron. It's basically a thin film cryotron.
We had another group at RCD Little that were making Josephson junctions.
Wow.
In fact, that they wrote a paper that came out about the same time as who was the author of the junctions?
I'm not sure, but Brian Josephson is the physicist who suggested, you know, that these supercurrents could tunnel, but I don't know who made the first device.
Yeah, I think Josephson and this group at RCD Little were both working on these junctions, and Josephson was a little bit ahead, and he put his article in, it might have been Nature, I'm not sure, it was one of those publications. And we were actually making devices. In fact, I was the person that was making the device for this group of people at that time. I had the laboratory equipment. They asked me to do it, so I was actually, I don't know if I made a device. I was making, doing experiments for them, various experiments. So that was interesting. That was kind of a connection you wouldn't expect, I guess.
Yeah, that's really interesting. Do you remember the names of anybody in that other Arthur D. Little group?
It was, I will remember it later on.
Okay, yeah, fair enough. I'd be interested to know.
I don't remember it right now.
Yeah, I'd be interested to know. So I could just...
The article, they both published in the same magazine, I believe.
Huh.
So it would be findable.
Yeah, I'll take a peek. Because, you know, it was not long after that IBM started that big program to make a Josephson Junction computer, you know, in the 1970s.
Yeah, well, that was the most interesting part of my life.
Hmm.
It was just so many new things, and I often wish I just stayed in that industry.
Yeah, it seems like it was just as you say, a new invention and a new development every day. It's just amazing the pace of change at that time was pretty astounding.
Yeah. It was fun to go through.
Yeah, I'm jealous of your experience of it. So it must have been an amazing time. Well, what I will do, Al, is I will contact my friends at the Computer History Museum about your cryotrons and cryotron circuits, and just try and develop that connection for you.
That'd be wonderful.
And if you think of anything else, you know, just let me know. And if I come up with anything new on the cryotron history or anything around that, I'll be sure to let you know.
Okay, yeah. I guess probably don't know that the Arthur D. Little went bankrupt. They pulled it up, I don't remember when, but probably 15 years ago.
Oh, I vaguely remember that now that you say that. I mean, I remember when they got deep into management consulting for a long time.
That's right. To me, that didn't fit my interests at all, but they were kind of, they did so many, such an interesting company. They did, what they called food and flavor.
Right.
Where they, made a particular, say, pie crust smell bad, or,
right.
You know, they had people that had exceptionally good, what do you call it, olfactory?
Yes.
They just were into a lot of things. They started out in chemistry.
Right.
So I was real surprised that they couldn't compete in this world. There's so many things that they could do. But I think they went away from laboratory things and more into, the management type things.
Right, and then didn't they divide the company and, like, isn't Accenture... I forget what happened.
There was one part that went off to, I guess the company makes these cryostats.
Right.
That part of the company.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's a shame. Well, it was such a well-regarded name for so long.
Yeah, it was a company I was proud to be with. They were really quite a great company.
Yeah. It's a shame.
Well, you've got an interesting job.
Oh, I sure do. I get to talk to a lot of interesting people, so it's a great job.
Okay, well...
Well, thanks again so much, and I'm really glad to have made the connection to you and to be able to talk to you, and I'm sure we'll hopefully be communicating more as I develop the connection for you with the Computer History Museum.
Good. Did you have any connection with the Buck family?
That's been a kind of a little bit of a, I don't know, no is the answer to that. What I did was there seemed to be a fellow who Douglas Buck, Dudley Buck's son, was kind of working with on a biography of Dudley Buck, or they were writing a book on Dudley Buck, but I don't think that book has ever appeared. But as I was doing my research, I got in touch with this fellow whose name escapes me at the moment, and after some repeated attempts to get in touch, we finally got in touch, and I actually went down to Jupiter, Florida, where a lot of Dudley Buck's papers are that his family had preserved. And I got a chance to look through some of those documents and take notes. And they have a whole bunch of cryotrons, some original wire wound cryotrons down there. I was always kind of at a distance to the Buck family, there was because this fellow who they were working with on the book project was kind of my contact, and like I never got their phone number, Douglas Buck's phone number or email or anything, and so you know, I have been interested and concerned to have Dudley Buck's papers preserved somewhere and have those cryotrons preserved somewhere, like maybe at the Computer History Museum also. But I haven't been able to. I don't have Douglas Buck's contact information, so I haven't been able to talk to him directly about it. So it's something that I every couple of months I kind of do another attempt at it. You know, I
yeah. Let me tell you my experience was I was trying to find somebody that would be interested in the circuits that I had and the things that I did.
Yes.
And I got in touch with a person, again, I can't remember his name, that worked for Dudley's son, Douglas.
Yes.
He was really enthusiastic. He says, "Wow, I didn't know you were still around. I really want to talk to you." And when I got down to say, "Okay, how about this weekend?" He never would call back. It was just like it was very strange. I mean, that he was so interested in talking to me, but then just never followed through on anything. And so I just dropped it, let it go. I understood that there was somebody in England that was writing a book on Dudley Buck. That sounds strange too, but
The guy I was interacting with is named Alan Dewey. I don't know if that rings a bell.
I think so. Yeah.
But I've asked him a couple times if he has Douglas Butt's contact information, and he's never given it to me. So it's kind of frustrating. When that article that I wrote on Dudley Buck came out, I wrote to Alan Dewey and I said, could you make sure that Dudley Buck's family sees this article? I think they, might like it. And then, Alan Dewey wrote me back and said, his wife sent me the link the day it came out. Very nice article, but, never, I don't understand why it keeps me at such a length from the Buck family. Who knows? It is a little strange.
Yeah. I guess her name is Jacqueline.
I don't know.
Yeah, and she's got to be at least 80 by now, something like that. Getting pretty old.
Yeah. Well, our conversation will give me a renewed push to try again. I'll see what I can discover.
Yeah. Yeah, that's a strange situation. I really don't understand it. He emailed me back once and said, "Okay, let's talk together." And how about this weekend? And but then he never followed through when I said okay and set a time. Just I don't know what the deal is.
Well,
there's something strange going on there.
I agree. Well, I'll be sure to tell you the nature of the mystery if I can unravel it.
Okay. There's another article for you.
Yeah.
Mystery of.
Yeah, continuing the mystery.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well,
sorry to keep you.
Not at all.
But, Dudley's death is, to me, still a mystery. And you mentioned, I think it was,
It was Boron. I think there were two things that he was working with, both of which were pretty hazardous.
They both died at the same time when they were both planning to go to the same meeting. And what was the other person's name?
Ridenour?
That was going, died with the same time Dudley did?
I think his name, the physicist, Lewis, Ridenour, or I'm not quite sure how.
Ridenour, he must, in order for that to be the explanation, he would have had to, have gone with Dudley to be exposed to see what Dudley was doing and be exposed to the same, guests.
That's true. Although I think Ridenour lived in Los Angeles. So it wouldn't have made that wouldn't have been possible.
So that deepens the mystery because what's the chance of these two guys that both work for NASA planning a trip at the same time and both dying at the same time?
Yeah, highly unlikely.
Yeah.
But,
I'm surprised that as far as I know, there was nothing ever done back in those days to figure out why they died.
I don't think so. I mean, they said that Dudley Buck had viral pneumonia. And I know that, at least when I talked to Alan Dewey, the guy in Florida working, who was associated with Douglas Buck, they seem to have, suspicions that there was, that it wasn't a coincidence, that they were killed for some reason. It was really just seeing that his last entry, Dudley Buck's last entry in his patent notebook, that, for me presented, at least an alternate, one sort of explanation for why he may have died so suddenly. Because it just didn't seem like a man of his age in good health should die from viral pneumonia so rapidly. But if the symptoms of this boron trichloride poisoning were similar to pneumonia, and it's known to be a very toxic material, that seemed to make a little more sense to me. But it doesn't explain
the figure out how Ridenour died at the same time.
Yeah, that I didn't look into. Because it is for some reason, I think I may have looked into it one time, and he may have died from a heart attack, but I don't recall.
Oh, well.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I just couldn't think of the motivation, too, either, for why somebody would have gone after these guys, unless it was some, like, the Soviets killing them or something.
There was some talk of a Soviet delegation visiting NSA, I guess it was.
Huh.
Through Dudley Buck.
Yeah, I'll have to dig into that sometime and see if there really is the coincidence, you know, and if so, learn more about it.
It could be a fascinating story.
It could.
It could be a story that would take many, many hours to get all the information about it.
Absolutely.
Particularly since it might have something to do with NSA, which is very secretive.
Yeah, it's been a little bit hard. Well, actually, you know, they have actually released a lot of information about the NSA and early computers. So some of the sources, their internal histories that they've declassified, have been actually very helpful to me in this work. So. I just hope they, over time, you know, let more of those documents out about their early years.
Yeah, yeah.
Because
I wonder what would happen if you typed in right now into the computer to see what comes up.
Yeah, it certainly will.
Okay.
Well, great to talk to you, and I will be in touch soon about the Computer History Museum.
Okay.
Okay.
Thanks. All right. Bye.
Bye-bye.